I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Fight Like a Girl Pod. This week we have a pretty special Pride Month episode, and we're going to be interviewing two of our closest friends on all things growing up queer and part of the LGBTQI plus community. But before we jump into that, Rav, how's your week been?
My week has been pretty good. We're recording on a Monday, so I'm going to talk about my weekend, and it was good. I got to get out of Sydney for a bit, but had a few hiccups at the airport. And then on the way home, I learned a very valuable lesson, which is don't book the last flight out of anywhere on a Sunday, because I got held up at the airport for so long, didn't get home until 11:30. And then that just, you know how it is trying to wind down after a flight. So yeah, that wasn't fun, but I got to see my family, so that was really nice. How about you?
That sounds really, really, that sounds quite nice, but also really frustrating. I think that's like the one thing that I've learned about like flying back from Queensland is like, don't get the last flight out, because you always get home at like 1 o'clock in the morning. It's truly awful, especially in daylight savings. My weekend and my week actually been pretty busy. I am leaving for my big American holiday in a week and a half, and trying to squeeze everything in and not get COVID at the same time, which has been an interesting experience, but you know, I'm still dodging the bullet for like the second or third time. So we'll see.
I feel like when you're gearing up to go on a trip, you almost think yourself sick because you're trying so hard to avoid getting sick that you just any little scratch in your throat or something, you're just like, oh shit, it's happening. It's happening. But you're going into warmer weather. If you are a little bit sick, you're not going to get COVID first of all. But if you are a little bit sick with the flu or anything, it'll like go away so quick because you're going into warmer weather.
That's what I keep telling myself. And then I kind of talk myself out of it because I'm like, you're going to like one of the most densely populated cities on the planet. But just mind over matter, I think, for this one. I'm just going to think myself out of getting it.
Yeah, we're not manifesting that a shitty trip.
No.
So
no, we're not. All right. Well, let's jump into the episode. So as I mentioned earlier, we're doing a Pride Month episode this week. And what inspired this episode was the recent coming out of Rebel Wilson and then the ensuing media storm with Sydney Morning Herald threatening to out her. So what we wanted to do this week was unpack why it's important to keep having these conversations and why it's so important to keep having these role models in the public eye, and also dive into why it's so dangerous to out somebody. Considering Rav and I aren't part of the LGBTQI plus community, but we're obviously incredibly staunch allies, we wanted to invite two of our friends on. So this week we're joined by Anna and Kieran. Rav, I'll let you introduce Anna.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Hi, Rav. Doing well. How are you?
I'm good. So how long has it been since you and I have seen each other? Do you remember when we last caught up?
I think it was when we had dinner early in the year when I ended up having that free night because a client bailed on me. So I ended up giving you the call.
And you told me about Bar Margot, the place that Lottie and I apparently ordered a $450 bottle of champagne at.
Love that. Yes, I did tell you about that place. I waved goodbye to all the staff as I left and they all clapped me out. It was fantastic.
It's a pretty cool little bar. And like I have to say, when you were telling me the story about the waitresses and waiters there, I was just like, Anna, I just feel like you were really drunk and you just imagined all of this. Like they probably weren't that friendly, but they really were. Mm-hmm. They're like a really good crew. Anna and I met, must have been what, back in
2017? Yeah.
Yeah. So Anna was working at an old workplace of mine, and this was actually my second stint at that workplace. So Anna didn't know who I was, and I walked in as somebody in a more senior position than her, and she was like, who's this bitch?
Who the f*** does she think she is coming in here, yeah, knowing all the rank? Yeah.
My first impressions of Anna were, holy fuck, she talks really loud. Like I printed off this meme that had like, was it Spartan or something like that?
I think it was Ned Stark because it was during GOT, so it was Ned Stark. I kept it for a while. I think I might even still have it.
And it was just like this meme that says, use your inside voice. And I stuck it on her desk and she never took it down, but she also never used her inside voice. So
I can't help the twang. It's just a natural twang. I cannot help it.
Anna is also a fellow Queenslander.
Ah, there you go. Whereabouts in Queensland are you from, Anna?
From Brisbane.
Yeah, a little bit more culturally refined than Kieran and I are Gold Coasters.
Well, I'm from Townsville. So, oh my God, everyone on this podcast today is a Queenslander.
Wow.
I think naturally then, like, all this week just has to be maroon, like everything we do.
I think the third state of origin game is on this week, so that must mean Queensland's going to win. I mean second, sorry.
I was like, I would know if it was the third. My father would be on the blower ranting at me hardcore because I was actually born in Sydney, so was he. So he'd be like, God, being a New South Welshman in Queensland during these like 6 weeks is horrific, apparently.
It's also pretty shit being from Queensland in a pub in New South Wales when New South Wales has just lost. I've never seen people leave a venue that quickly in my life. But anyway, we digress. Back to Anna. So Anna is also a fellow Queenslander, so we've known each other for a few years now. And I believe the next time I'm going to see Anna is actually going to be at her hens in a few weeks' time.
It is.
I'm very excited about that. But, yeah, that's Anna and I, and that's Anna in a nutshell. I'm sure you guys will hear more from her in a few moments. But over to you, Lottie, so we can meet Kieran.
So we've got Kieran joining us. Kieran and I have known each other a little bit longer than Anna and Rav. Kieran and I met in grade 8 in 2001 at Southport State High and have been pretty much like brother and sister ever since. We have a friendship that spans many, many different facets, including crushes and all of that sort of fun stuff. But Kieran, I'll let you introduce yourself.
So yes, I've known Charlotte for a very long time, and in all fairness, I feel like we just have to go there straight away. I did have a crush on Charlotte in high school. I did actually bleach my hair for Charlotte when I was a lot younger. So that's kind of, we've been friends for a very long time. A little bit about me, same age as Charlotte, flight attendant, have been for about 15 years. And, I guess our friendship has gone through lots of different decades. And it's been, it's amazing. And, we are like brother and sister. We're pretty much family now, I think.
But basically, I think my mother calls you her other son. So she's always like, how's my other son going? But it has it has spanned many different iterations and many different memes being exchanged. And I think we can both agree, a fuck ton of wine.
Yes. I don't even think we could measure it accurately, to be honest.
Like an Olympic-sized swimming pool might be sufficient.
Possibly. But look, I definitely enjoy having a few wines with you. We like cranking on the Dua Lipa at all times of the morning, and we just have a great time.
We absolutely do. Well, it's great to have you both on the potty this week. So I might just jump straight into it. So I thought a really good way to open up this conversation is to, I guess, ask a bit of a broad question, and I'd love to understand what it was like growing up as, I guess, you know, queer in Australia. What was your experience like?
So my story is a little interesting. I didn't actually realise until I was 18 that I was queer. So I grew up in Brisbane in a very religious family, so Pentecostal Christians, went to a Christian school, was a part of the church singing group, and, you know, was very involved with the Lord for a long period of time. And then I had a gap year between high school and uni and started working, was in a music theatre show in Brisbane, and first met my first lot of lesbian women. And, you know, I think growing up in the church as well, you hear a lot about gay men, but you don't actually hear a lot about gay women. And so for me, I'd always known that gay was a thing, but really just from a male perspective. And then when I sort of met these women, I was like, huh, my whole life makes a lot more sense now. Because from a very young age, I can remember, you know, I would have crushes on my girlfriends, but in those sort of scenarios, I was always a boy. Not that I identify as anything else other than a woman, but in my mind, what made sense of that whole scenario was that I was a man and then they were the women that I was crushing on. And it was only a year or two ago, I think, my sister said to me, oh yeah, I remember when you were four, because she's 12 years older than me. She was like, I had all of my girlfriends around one afternoon, and as a four-year-old, I walked into the room, I put my arm on the door handle, and I was like, how you doing? To all the girls. Like, how did I not know that I was gay? Like, wow, it really took a lot. But yeah, so I think, you know, it was tricky because, you know, I think in the last 5, 10 years, you know, it's only really become something where kids can be gay or are gay and are treated, you know, as it's something that could be normal, you know, like it's just, it wasn't really something that I experienced when I was growing up, particularly within the circle and community that I was growing up in, because it was, you know, very Christian. So.
Yeah. Wow. That's so interesting. I wasn't expecting the religious facet of that. And I'd love to sort of know, like, you know, what was the reception like when you, you know, told, are your family still religious?
Yes, they're all still very religious. They, you know, I think they've come a long way for them. Mm. I think when I first came out, there was a period where we didn't speak, and you know, there's still a misunderstanding almost, or you know, they don't get it, they don't wish it on me or for me, they're still praying for me every day kind of thing. But they are coming to the wedding. And Rav, I don't know if I've told you this, but my family will be there at the wedding.
Did not know that, but I do now.
So that took a bit of an interesting turn, because originally they weren't invited. And I went up to Brisbane earlier in the year and I just said to them, hey, you know that I'm getting married, but I understand what your belief is, and you know, the last thing I would want is to make you uncomfortable. This is a day about me, so I don't want to be thinking about you on that day. So ideally, Han and I will, you know, come up after the wedding at some point to do like a little celebration, but understand it's, you know, not something that you would really want to be involved with. You know, it took a little bit of processing, a lot less time than I was expecting, but then, you know, with the thought of a friend giving me away instead of dad. And then I think just the knowledge that it's a pretty important day, they were like, look, we still can't call it a ceremony or a marriage, but we want to be there. So
wow.
Yeah. Wow. But that's taken a long time, so to get to that point. There are a lot of layers here. There's a lot to unpack.
Anna's actually coming back for a completely separate podcast later in the year. I think we'll have the post-wedding podcast to unpack it all.
Oh my goodness.
And Kieran, I'd love to sort of, I mean, I was there for most of it, but I'd love to sort of hear in your words, you know, what your experience was like.
I just have to say, Anna, you've got incredible courage. I think that's massive and that's huge. So I just want to kind of take my hat off to you.
Oh, thank you for that.
I guess I've kind of had a bit of a polar, I guess, experience. I've been lucky enough. I've had, you know, grown up with my brother. My mum was a single mother, and my family have just been extremely supportive, extremely loving. I guess for me, I do remember being probably about 12 or 13, and my mum, at that point, we all had the family computer. So, you know, we didn't have individual laptops. We're all on dial-up, waiting for someone to get off the landline. And I remember one particular night, my mum like came in and she, you know, wanted to have a conversation about something. And she's like, you know, I found some really interesting web searches on Internet Explorer. And I was just like, oh dear. But to be honest, like, I think for me, it was because I had that, I guess, support from a very, very young age. I did feel comfortable. And I guess I was even thinking, you know, about it today in high school, like, growing up, I guess, in the emo phase that we did, it kind of made things a little bit easier, in the sense that I think when we were growing up, it was seen to be, you know, if you were quite quirky and quite cool and quite different, and, you know, men wearing girls' jeans. Like, I was thinking about this a lot today, and I do think in some way it kind of did make things easier for me. I wouldn't say it was always easy. There was obviously times when you kind of, I guess, doubting who you are and doubting exactly what you're feeling, because, you know, high school's a shit show enough. Then you've kind of got all your head monologues going on. But I think all in all, I'm lucky, because I know every experience that people have is different. And I'm just glad my family, yeah, really had my back and continue to.
I love that. You know, this is probably a good sort of segue into what we're going to talk about next, which is, you know, by the sounds of it, Kieran, your experience is going to sound a lot different to Anna's experience around what it was like, you know, when you finally sort of realized that you were ready to come out. So, Anna, I imagine for you, there were a lot of sort of other considerations that you had around the religious factor in your family, whereas Kieran, for you, it probably was a little bit different. So, yeah, Anna, I would love to hear what your experience was like.
Yeah, for sure. I think, firstly, I moved away pretty much as quickly as I could once I realised what was going on. And so I moved to Ballarat to do my undergrad in music theatre. So I surrounded myself with a bunch of gays, which was fantastic. And, you know, it was very quickly on that I then, you know, met a girl. We started dating pretty much from like my first week being in Ballarat. And we ended up almost being together for 6 years. So that was a very, very serious thing. But, you know, it was probably only a few months in. And mind you, so when I decided that, no, yes, I am actually gay. And mind you, I'd slept with men like gay straight phase ago, because I was like, maybe it's something that I choose. and it's not to say that sleeping with men is a bad thing. Like, it's fine. It was good enough.
I love that description.
Look, you know, had a good time, but obviously just never wanted anything more than that. So when I realized, oh, I'm gay, and this is my perception or my idea of what being a gay woman was, I chopped off all my hair. I started wearing boys' clothes. I ultimately looked like a man, because in my mind and my very limited, naive knowledge of what being a gay woman was, that was kind of the first thing that would always, you know, pop up. My outlook or my appearance changed, and I was very reluctant going home for things. And because I had then had a whole community of people who loved and supported me, who knew that I was gay in a relationship with someone, and, you know, this was the new me, this was Anna 2.0. And I remember sitting down with my sister one time. I did eventually go back home, and she was just like, look at you. I was like, yes, I know I'm gay. And she was like, I can tell looking at you now, basically. But, you know, she was like, look, mum is not understanding why you're either not responding to things or not wanting to come to things, or, you know, always putting off going to church. So at that point in terms of coming out to them, because realistically, I don't feel like I had to come out to my friends because it just, yeah. It was then a part of who I was. So my coming out was specifically just to my family. And I told my sister first because she's, in my mind, the most reasonable of them all. And then she was just basically like, look, you need to tell mum to just stop her nagging you, because that was ultimately what it felt like. So I ended up writing a letter.
Wow.
Because I knew that mum would go to her pastor of the church. And I was like, well, if you're going to go to someone, I want you to be showing them my words and not yours. And so I wrote a really long essay. However, the way that I came out, I also just decided to be like, by the way, this is when I lost my virginity, and kind of went down a, let me preface this by saying I was quite young when I lost my virginity. It was completely my choice. I was the one who instigated everything. I was then the one who called it off. However, being very young and then growing up in the church after that point, I then looked back and went, could that have been rape? Potentially. Mm-hmm. However, after then coming to terms with what I actually didn't know and where my mindset was, it wasn't. But for me, it was almost an easier way of being like, this is why I'm gay, and kind of putting a it's because of this reason as opposed to it is just who I am. So that's one part I regret now. And I've had subsequent conversations with mum being like, FYI, it wasn't that. I'm not going to go into the details with you, mum, but trust me, it wasn't that. And so then I think the biggest part of the coming out was then, well, you know, Anna was taken advantage of many years ago, and this is why she is the way that she is. But yeah, they didn't talk to me mum didn't talk to me for a while. Dad was just like, it's going to take time. And then it got to a point where there was like a family reunion that was going on. And they wanted me to fly up for that. And I just said, well, look, I'm not going to hide who I am. I know at every family reunion they always ask, oh, who are you dating, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, mum, if you're comfortable with me telling them that I'm dating a woman, then I will come to this family event. Otherwise, we're done. So I kind of gave a bit of an ultimatum. I'm very dramatic like that. And so, yeah, that was it. And she was like, look, well, I think at first she was like, I don't come. And then they ended up changing their mind. And I don't know whether they had told everyone or like just basically put a ban on talking about my personal life, but no one asked. So I was like, okay, well, oh, well. Sorry, that was very long-winded. My apologies.
No, that was incredible. Thank you so much for, being vulnerable. And I know Kieran said it before, but you just have so much like a tremendous amount of strength to do that. And then, you know, after all of that, like my mother's family is quite religious as well. They're Mormon and probably not as extreme as Pentecostal Christians, but at the same time, like having all of that pressure when you're growing up and then getting to that point where you're like, no, this is who I am. Take me as I am. And to be able to stand on your own two feet and, you know, say that to your parents, like, unless you're prepared for me to talk about the fact that I'm dating a woman, I'm not coming to this family reunion. Like, that's ballsy.
My mum's very headstrong, so you kind of need to meet her at the same level.
It's crazy. Like Lottie, you were saying, you know, you can relate on a religious level as well. For me, I still, to this day, I'm 32, and I still sometimes will find reasons to pin things on other things to come out to my parents for certain things that just go against cultural norms for me. So, you know, I know you said that you've had multiple conversations with your mum since to explain that that wasn't the case, but I don't think you should harbour any guilt for feeling like you had to do that, because I think in some capacity we've all had to do it, and I will put my hand up now and say I still do it. So, yeah, I think it takes a lot of courage, and I never knew all of this about you. That's I've learned a lot today. Kieran, I really want to hear how it was for you as well.
Yeah, of course. I think a lot of mine was kind of caught up in the whole teenage angst. I think, you know, going, like, I used to love The Used. I used to love all this, you know, angry music. And I think kind of reflecting on that now, I think it was this whole thing of like, you know, people don't understand me. But I think at that point, I didn't actually really understand myself. Obviously, going through high school, you know, when we did, I guess living on the Gold Coast, already coming from a foreign country, like I did kind of feel quite out of place. But I think at the same time, you don't really know what's going on in your own head until you can kind of reflect a few years later. I do remember kind of, you know, going through this whole like, no one understands me, no one gets me. And then I remember my mum sitting down with me one day when I was 16, and she had a VB can, and she gave me a VB, and we're sitting outside our place we were renting on the Gold Coast, and she looks at me and she says, "Darling, I think you might be gay." Oh. And I just looked at her and I said, "Yes, mum, I'm gay." And that kind of was, it was a pinnacle moment for me, but I also think it was just the start of a new kind of level of our relationship. And I guess on the flip side of that, I have had a few partners that have had a very different, I guess, you know, coming out experience or a different upbringing to what I've had. So I've kind of seen the flip end of that as well. I do know how lucky that I am that I have, you know, had the experience that I have had. But I think also seeing, you know, the storyline of someone having to kind of process their own identity and then having to kind of have the confidence and the guts to be able to tell their family, like you were saying, Anna, like, this is who I am. I can't hide it anymore. I'm going to live my life as authentically as I possibly can. Yeah, I mean, my mum, you know, it's never really been something she's very proud of me. She's very proud of my brother's also gay as well. Charlotte knows my brother very well. And I remember a moment as well, my mum actually, so my mum is a recovering alcoholic, and she kind of went through a phase of, you know, finding religion and was very heavily involved with the church for quite a while. And it was while we were going through the whole, you know, Australia Let's Vote, if, you know, gay marriage should be, you know, a thing, which I can't even still believe to this day that it was even something. But during that whole process, my mum was going to a church. She lives in a rural part of Victoria. And the church was basically saying, you know, we don't agree with this. It shouldn't be legalized. And my mum had the guts to actually get up in this church and say in front of everyone that she had two gay sons, that she couldn't be prouder. And literally it was a mic drop moment, and she just like stormed outside of the church. And I just remember, I was like, my God, I could not possibly love this woman more than what I do. So, yeah. Oh,
that's amazing. That just gave me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Actually, I just got goosebumps listening to that.
She's an incredible woman.
She's great. And she's kind of become a mother figure for a lot of my friends and a lot of my, you know, people that I kind of have involved in my life. She just has this incredible capacity to just love without any, without any judgment. Yeah, so I'm very lucky to have her in my life. Yeah,
I remember when that happened, when she was, you know, finding, you know, some friends through the church community with in the town she lives in. And it's frustrating to hear such things like that, because I know, like, I've known your mum as long as I've known you, and I know that she's a recovering alcoholic as well. And when you are at a place of that vulnerability, when you're in a town, obviously you grew up in New Zealand as well before you moved to Australia, so she doesn't have a huge friendship network here to rely on the church, which is what a lot of people do, and then to have that happen as well. And I think, like, your mother is one of the most incredibly, like, she's one of the strongest people I've ever met in my life. Like, she's just in, like, I can't even put words together. She's so amazing. And to do that is just such an incredible act of love and defiance.
And I don't even think she actually understood the magnitude of just how big that was for both me and my brother. I think because it just comes so naturally to her. I was like, you need to actually take a second and realize just how big of an issue, like, not how big of an issue, but like how strong of, you know, an action that is. And
yeah, it's a huge statement.
Huge statement, and it's something that we still talk about to this day. And she's like, "Oh, stop talking about it. It was nothing." I'm like, "Come on."
Bless her.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this is, again, I think we're going to say segue about 700 times on this podcast today. But I think this is, you know, it's a good transition. Transition's much sexier than the word segue. So a good transition into the next question. When you were ready to, you know, come out, and you both had very, very different experiences to each other, how important was it to have people visible in the media who were out and who were living their best lives? Like, how much did it mean to you to have people like that to be like, it's going to be okay. Or, you know, that's the life that I want. That's the life that I deserve for myself.
To be fair, I don't think there were very many people when I was coming out or discovering who I was. I think really the only lesbian was Ellen. And, you know, that's not saying much. As all classic young lesbians do, I bought the box set to the L Word the second I started being like, oh, what does being gay mean? And devoured that. But, you know, again, social media wasn't really a thing. So it's not like I started following who these women were or even really looking them up to know if they were actually gay or if they were just actors. Obviously, some of them were, but I think in particular, it would have been amazing to have role models. Mm. And I look at how many public figures are out now, and there's still not nearly enough, obviously. But, you know, for those who are, and even people like Penny Wong, like in politics, like killing it, you know, just like Indigenous people want to be represented in film, in music, in movies, in politics, in everyday life, you know, I think we want to be represented the same way too. And it's starting to surface more. And, you know, probably one observation is it's generally still like the indie side of things or not necessarily mainstream media, but there's certainly far more queer folks out there now making an impact. But, you know, even within mainstream, it's still lacking in my personal opinion. But every single person who comes out makes a difference. And, you know, I think it allows people to go, oh, like they're living a life and the life that they're living is something that I could do too. It's hard because like famous people, I don't look at someone famous and go, I'm going to live that life, right? Because I'm never going to be famous. So it's hard relating to that. But I think what is inspirational is going, you're in such a public eye. Firstly, not for me. So that's a huge task. But, you know, secondly, you are being vulnerable in front of a lot of people. You've got the fear of potentially losing a huge following because, sadly, a lot of people still think that because you're gay, it changes who you are. Mm. Sorry, still the same person, but, you know, that's just people's perceptions sometimes. And so, yeah, it's a struggle, but I'm proud to see more people starting to come out, and particularly Rebel Wilson. Like, you know, it just goes to show, yeah, sure, like people dated men and, you know, part of old mate's argument was, well, we'd be writing a gossip column if she was dating a man. Sure. Does anyone really care? Probably not. But at the same time, like when you're not previously out or doing something like that, I just don't think it's, you know, it's no one's business. You should be able to do whatever you want to do when you want to do it. And you don't have to define yourself to anyone. You don't have to justify why now all of a sudden you're gay when maybe once upon a time you were straight or maybe you were bi the whole time. But again, it just, everyone's so different, and the fact that it has to matter, I think, is really sad. The more people who start standing up and just living their truths, even if it's not about sexuality, I think the more everyone will realize that people are just people and they should be able to, you know, be good people. Yeah. And as long as they're a good person and impacting the world in a positive way, who cares?
I think, like, just touching on what you said before, like, it shouldn't even be a thing anymore, which is sort of, I guess, you know, the impetus of like where we got to with the wanting to do this episode today. Rav and I, is you're right, like would they have just been writing a gossip column if she was dating a man? Yes, but it's not up for that journalist to make that decision. It's absolutely exactly. Like they have no right to do that whatsoever. It's up to Rebel to say that and to be forced into that position where she had what I think it was like 27 hours or something to.
I gave her 48 hours.
Yeah, to not be given the opportunity to do it on her terms. And yeah. I feel like the media storm that that article created it definitely denied her, you know, so much of what she deserved, but also it just made it a bigger deal than it needed to be. And it's still a huge deal. Like it's so incredibly important to have, you know, that visibility and to be, you know, Rebel Wilson. She's one of Australia's biggest exports. She's, you know, done incredibly well for herself, but, you know, she was denied that. we said earlier before that, you know, Ellen's probably not the best role model just because she's, you know, we've all read the article. She's not a great person from what I've read. I don't know her personally. I just remember I read it recently, I think, or maybe I watched something like on YouTube, I can't remember, about her coming out experience and how much was on the line for her, which was, I think she ended up coming out at Oprah or something like that. And like she, like, I think she lost a lot of endorsement deals and like her TV show and all of that sort of stuff. And it's wild to think that that was only what, 25 years ago, like it was the late 90s. And like how far we've come since then, but this is, you know, we're still coercing people into doing this when we have no right to.
Personally, for me, I think I've always been one, well, not always, but I have had a tendency in the past to meet someone who I think is relatively flamboyant, mainly men, because I feel like I have a really good gaydar, but not for women. Every woman I fell in love with started off straight. From a male perspective, you know, there were definitely friends of mine or people that I would meet and I'd be like, oh, so you're gay. And they'd be like, no. And I'd be like, oh, okay, so you're just not gay yet. And then I now realize how terrible that was, right? But again, like this mindset, and I think also from me being like, I've had a really hard journey. If I can do it, anyone should be able to do it sort of thing. But, you know, it's that whole part, particularly being in the public eye, you know, there's a reason why you keep things separate. And like I lived two lives for a period of time where I was myself in one community, and then I would, you know, go home to Brisbane and I would basically act completely differently because I felt really uncomfortable. And then it wasn't until I came to that position where I no longer wanted to be two different people that I then combined that. But I still had the ability to choose when that happened. And you know, to Rebel's point, there's so much going on in everyone's lives, let alone someone in the public eye, to take that away or to force anyone to come out. And it's shocking. But I'm really happy that she's out now and hopefully can now live her best life, and anyone who's a hater can go wear a tinfoil hat. I don't know.
Go and, like, live in Broken Hill where they don't probably have like internet reception or something like that.
Yeah.
If we have any listeners from Broken Hill, please don't come for me. I'm very sorry.
Hey, they accepted Priscilla. So
to the people of Broken Hill, I'm sorry, we take it back. But Kieran, I'd love to I'd love to hear it from you. I think this isn't probably something we've talked about much in our friendship. I'm just trying to think about any role models that you did look up to when we were kids.
I honestly think, like, because as you said, Anna, like, social media wasn't really a big thing. I mean, sure, we had MySpace, but it was more so for your top eight friends that would change every week. And then you'd have
arguments. Really showing our age here.
No, I know.
We were out the other day. We were at the pub in the middle of the day on a work day. Don't judge me here. And Kieran goes to me, he's like, you're in my top eight on my phone. And I was like, what the fuck is that? Yeah, if you update your iOS, you can have like your top eight on your text messages or something like that. I was like, oh, God, I guess, well, like 90s fashion's coming back in, so now we're getting top eight back again.
I don't think really there was any kind of like, I guess, pinnacle kind of like people that I can think of. I mean, I did grow up loving Boy George. I did grow up loving the Spice Girls. And I think, look, I still love the Spice Girls and I'm never going to stop loving them, so that's just my reality. But I think it was kind of more when I had the conversation with my friends, and I remember even having this conversation with you, Lottie, it was like, you know, I put so much emphasis on coming out because it seemed like it was going to be this massive moment that, you know, I'd been wanting to kind of have happen for so long. And to be honest, the reaction was like, oh, yeah, we know. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I've obviously been like stewing for like the last few years, you know. And it was just, I mean, luckily I had friends who were obviously that receptive to it, but it was kind of even sometimes them not knowing before I did, but starting that conversation for me, if that makes sense, which I'm thankful for because obviously it just made me feel super comfortable and I felt quite safe. But I think living, you know, obviously living in the public eye as a celebrity and having to experience what Rebel has, I think it's crazy it's still happening, especially after we've come so far in terms of educating. And it's just the importance of having these conversations is huge. I don't think someone coming out needs to be such a huge, massive deal. It's already big enough for someone kind of having to, I guess, articulate how they are going to come out and exactly what that's going to look like for them and when they're ready. The fact that someone, I guess, was forced to make, well, not forced, but pressured to make a decision to obviously go public with something is, yeah, it still disgusts me. But it should never be something, I think, that someone has to really go through.
It's interesting that you say that about coming out shouldn't have to be that big of a deal anymore, because that's almost kind of what sparked this whole episode for us as well, because I spoke to Lottie about the Rebel Wilson incident and I almost said the exact same words, you know, like, why did it have to be such a big announcement as well? Because on either fronts, right, firstly, from the media outlet, like, why is this newsworthy, number one? And number two, from her side, like, she shouldn't have, you know, specifically have to, like, label it, which she did obviously by saying maybe she was looking for a princess this whole time, right? My first thought was it shouldn't have to be such a big deal. Like, we as hetero cis people don't go around announcing all of our relationships. And also, you know, she's been out with her partner multiple times. They've been photographed together multiple times, but people just didn't assume that they were in a same-sex relationship. So when do we draw the line that we just shouldn't be interested in that aspect of people's lives? Like, it's called a personal life for a reason. I'd actually be interested to understand from, like, any experiences that you guys have had with friends. So we're not talking about people in the public eye. Have they had to make big sort of, I guess, gestures like that to announce that they're in same-sex relationships or that they're gay?
I remember there was my best friend. He was still living in Brisbane when I had moved away, and I called him to be like, hi, I'm dating a woman. And he was like, oh, cool. Also, I've been gay for years. And I was like, okay. we're just at this moment of, like, you know, and I think as well he had kept that side of himself, like, very private, and obviously his close friends who were always going out with him to, you know, the beach and all of those fun places in Brisbane. I honestly don't think really for me it's been that different between my straight and gay friends. I think if anything, it's just most people have been like, I am with this person now, and I go, okay.
Yeah.
Whether they're same sex or whether they're not.
Has it been the same in your experience, Kieran?
I think I've kind of experienced, even with friends that, you know, are straight, are gay, I think there's a combination of different reactions that my friends have kind of gone through. One of my friends recently came out to her family probably about a year ago now, and hearing some of their reactions from her family were just, like, crazy for me to even fathom, you know, saying things to her like, it's just a phase, we don't believe you. And I think to hear that really obviously upset me, number one, but, like, number two, how dare someone question someone's vulnerability, especially in a moment like that. And, you know, her background very quickly, you know, she comes from a small country town. It's a very different lifestyle to, I guess, you know, metropolitan Melbourne. But even still, I think part of that, not stigma, but the cultural education is still something that I think is really important. And I think what we're going to find is, obviously, we kind of, you know, keep on going through life. Things are becoming more, you know, more known, and it's becoming more of a thing that people do talk about. But there's still that underlying kind of, I think, oh, you know, taboo, you know, is it something you really want to talk about? Are you sure you want to discuss this? That does still exist. And I mean, that shouldn't be the reality that we're in, but it definitely is something that, friends of mine have experienced in the last year or two.
Yeah, Kieran, just to sort of follow on from that, I think where we see a lot of confusion or misunderstanding come from people is where for a period of time, you have been doing one thing and then in their mind you've just woken up one day and gone, actually, no, that's not for me, right? Like, if you've been a queer little kid from day dot, everyone goes, oh, well, he's been queer his whole life, like, we get it.
But it's
the people who have had, you know, hetero relationships or whatever who then actually go, no, I'm not. You know, I think that's where it becomes tricky, and particularly even then if you don't identify as bi. Like, for me, for example, like, I've slept with men, I've been with men, but I'm a lesbian. Like there's, I'm not bi. There's no way, right? Like there's just, it's not a thing.
Yes.
But, and then, so I can understand from some people's perspectives, they're like, yeah, but you've slept with men. So like, why would, and I'm like, no, but I'm a lesbian. Like that's just, so, you know, it's that sort of challenge. And, you know, I can imagine from Rebel's perspective as well, you know, she has been very public with dating men before, and then out of the blue, she's gay, you know, surprise. But it's like, obviously that hasn't just been an overnight thing. Like it's probably been culminating for God knows how many years or her whole life. So yeah, I think that's where some of it can come from. Not that it's excusable in any way, but you know.
And I think as well, like, I think that, I mean, for our generation, it's a little bit different because we grew up as the dawn of the internet age sort of hit and like watching a lot of American TV and all of that sort of stuff. But I think, you know, we generally, and I would like to think all of our close friends as well, understand that sexuality is fluid and your sexual preferences are fluid. They will change. They can change. And you can't help who you fall in love with. And it's not black and white.
Preach. That's exactly what I was going to say, Anna.
And I think, you know, Kieran talking about your friend who came out to her family, you know, I think it's people who live, I don't know, quite sheltered lives or who were, you know, of a very specific generation where it's like, no, you are one or the other. And it's like, why can't I have both?
And it's quite funny, my grandma still, because, you know, when I came out with her, like she again is like, She's a very, 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 very special woman to me, but she can be quite funny with her humour sometimes. So she's having little spouts of dementia at the moment, and, you know, she'll ask me, even last week, she's like, oh, you know, have you got a wife yet? And I'm like, no, you know that I'm gay. And she's like, ha, joking. And I'm like, come on, man. So, I mean, it's interesting, obviously, hearing, you know, her history and her being so open with how she found things growing up, obviously a very different era to where any of us are from, and people having to like have weird waltzes at a dance to like show their sexuality. I'm like, it's amazing to see how far we've come, but I definitely agree with you, Lottie. Like there's always going to be you know, obviously people that aren't exposed to certain situations and perhaps haven't had the education and don't really know how to approach something, hence why these conversations are so important.
Absolutely. I think I'd love to hear from both of you what advice you would give to anybody grappling with their sexuality and hesitating to come out.
From my perspective, I would say it always gets better. I would say that, you know, sometimes it feels like you're at the end and there's no hope for it. But, you know, there are a lot of queer people out there. You actually don't have to go as far as you think to find one. And, you know, take it in your own time. But ultimately, you know, my preference is the sooner that you can start living your truth, the happier you will be. And whether that means moving away, changing your situation, or just trusting in a friend or two or five, if you have that many close friends, to just say, hey, like, I just need to tell you something. And again, it doesn't have to be that big of a thing, but I think working out what makes the most sense for you. But yeah, I can't imagine living another day where I would have to suppress who I am. So I think the sooner you can do that, even if it's really hard to begin with and everything goes to shit, it may, it's not always a cakewalk. But I think, you know, there are a lot of people out there who will love you and surprisingly support you. You know, the company that Rav and I met was Bible Belt Texans, and I was out with them, you know, from day dot. And for people who you would consider very conservative Christians, were some of the most accepting people I'd ever come across, particularly in a workplace. So, you know, I think sometimes give people the benefit of the doubt. There are still going to be horrible people, and hopefully they'll get that 5G in their brain and melt away. But you know, I think, yeah, just trust in who you are and like take your time, but do it as quick as you can, almost. Like it's that kind of oxymoron, but yeah, just just trust that you've got good people around you and lean on them.
I think for me, it's kind of this understanding that sexuality is such a journey. And even for me, it still continues to be. I think my biggest message would be is just, you know, be proud of who you are. There really is no one in this world that is going to be like you. And as rough as the journey might be sometimes, I think looking back, I guess, in the last 10, 15 years, personally, my own life, I could, as you said, Anna, I couldn't imagine living a day where I'm not being 100% me. Living a life that is authentic to me. And I guess it's kind of finding your voice as well. The journey isn't always going to be easy. It's not always going to be rainbows and butterflies. But I think starting as soon as you can. And I guess knowing that there are so many people that will provide support, whether that be a conversation you have with someone or getting advice from someone on how to approach something. None of us are alone. And I think that's something we can probably all agree with. And it's, yeah, just finding the courage to start having those conversations.
Thank you both so much for the conversation today. This has been such an amazing episode. Honestly, I didn't anticipate that the conversation would lead in some of the directions that it did lead into. So, you know, thank you both for being so open and vulnerable. We really appreciate that. And I'm sure that, you know, our little community that listens to this episode every other week is going to find something that resonates with them and perhaps even share it with someone who might need to hear some of the things that you guys have spoken about. So thank you so much for that. And as always, thank you for your support to everyone who listens in every week. I know we're a little bit hit and miss with the episode sometimes. So thank you for being patient with us. And I can't encourage you guys highly enough to please share this episode with someone who you think might need it. And yeah, I think, you know, as both Kieran and Anna have mentioned multiple times on, you know, the episode, we still have a long way to go. So I think we all kind of need to be allies and continue to support the group. So thank you all so much for joining.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.